Hey everybody, and welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast, issue 23. Nick just got back from New York, so he's going to be talking to us about that, and then we're going to talk about some recent stuff. I don't know if we're going to get to the back of the previews, sadly. Maybe we'll try to hit that next week. But we have some stuff lined up, so we'll go around the table first. My name's Colin McMahon. I'm owner of Pittsburgh Comics.
Oh, man. Adam Russell.
Ryan Sargent.
Joe F.
Matt Lytle.
Sugar Shane.
Jeremy Dan.
Tony Andreoli.
And calling in from Cleveland?
At Nick Borelli.
After a very sad absence, we were lost. We didn't know what to do without you.
I listened, and I just want to jump in and yell something like when there's some continuity mistakes, but that's okay.
That's why we need you. We'd normally call out to you going, "Where's Nick?" Like we called out to poor Joe.
I was buying things.
Yeah. So I guess we might as well start. Tell us your stories from New York.
Well, I wrote a little bit today just so I could, you know, stay on point. Let me tell you a few things. One, costumes. I've been to a lot of different cons, but New York, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because of the anime kids or whatever, a lot of costumes. Definitely the clear winner is the Matt Smith Doctor Who. I don't know if it's a combination of its popularity or the fact that it's got to be the easiest costume to put together.
I saw a picture of you wearing a fez at one point.
Yeah, I was wearing a fez at one point, sure. You get caught up in that stuff. Winston Churchill, the actor that plays him, was there. So that was kind of cool. A lot of Deadpools, a lot of variations on Deadpools. There was a Ghostbuster Deadpool and a original X-Men Deadpool and a Lady Deadpool, a Headpool. There was a Catpool. Somebody brought their cat.
Uh-oh, don't give Marvel ideas.
Yeah, there was... there's a Harry Potter dog, so I guess that's fine. My favorite was the Dark Helmet from Spaceballs.
Cool. Cool.
Either that or the Planet of the Apes in the characters in Star Trek uniforms. That was pretty cool. But one thing I would tell people here, if you're going to go to that con ever, the VIP pass is so worth it. The fact that you get a VIP room, I don't think it's that much more for what you get as far as value. I actually was able to watch quite a few of the panels from the VIP room without having to get any lines. I could read my comics. I could have a table. I could eat. They closed circuited a lot of the bigger panels. They had three different panels on three different screens with like couches, so you can go whichever one you want. So that was pretty fun. The panels, I mostly just looked at watched the big ones, and I watched the entire episode of the Green Lantern animated series, which I had reservations on, but it's really fun.
Can you explain that just a little bit more, what you mean, like, by the... Is it just, like, a little room that's away from the con that you can go into whenever?
Yeah. Yeah, if you have a VIP badge, you can go in there. They give you a couple extra stuff. They have water there. They check your things, so if you buy stuff, like statues, you don't have to haul them around all day.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, and that in and of itself is totally worth it. You don't have to get in line to go in. You just show your badge, and you bypass the whole line scenario.
How does that compare price-wise, like ticket-wise?
For the whole weekend, it was, I think it's $180 versus, I guess, like $70.
Okay.
But it made it very comfortable. They had snacks and food. And the closed-circuit TV thing was awesome, though, because every time I went in there, I could just, you know, catch part of a panel, and it was getting kind of boring. I didn't have to get up and bump people and cause attention.
Now, do they have any of the guests in there also, or was it just, like, attendees?
Just the fatter of the attendees. just the guy that needs, you know, the guys that need breaks.
Right. I gotcha.
Yeah, it's skewed that way, certainly.
So, what big news out of New York?
Well, I mean, you guys saw probably on Newsarama some of the big news, you know, as far as the regular items. You know, some of the stuff that Marvel... and Image, I guess, talked about. Those two companies seem to be the one doing the most, you know, dropping the most bombs. As far as, you know, scuttlebutt and buzz, DC had the most of it. They conversations were mostly about what people were thinking about the new 52 and people trying to figure out just exactly why it seemed like certain creators are jumping ship. My opinion is it's 52 books, and those amount of people leave books all the time.
Yeah. It's just it's everything's more focused on who are they talking about leaving? Because we know John Rosen left. Is she off? Did she leave?
No, nothing has been confirmed yet. She's being very coy. And I think that just did not ruin the buzz on the floor. But that's what people were talking about. And I think it was because it was split between women in comics discussion and her being the political kind of face of that movement. And the fact that she carries a lot of, you know, integrity with what she says. So if she's leaving for a reason, generally it's that reason. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about how closely the editors are controlling these books. That said, most of the contacts that I have out there are in Marvel. The friend that I was staying with the whole time used to work at Marvel, and we hung out with his one good friend, Rich, who's in their marketing department most of the time. And then my friend is also friends with Agent M, Ryan.
Okay.
So we got to go up in the little booth. They have a skybox that looks down on the whole con in Judgment, which was fun. We would go look up there, and we look down and look at all the ants as they played their video games. And I'll tell you, the video game areas were by and far the craziest and most packed. I mean, it made the comic book Capcom made Marvel look pathetic. There was announcers and tournaments and games being played, and you couldn't walk through it. I mean, it was like a dead zone. Most of it was Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And which is a pretty amazing looking game. You can actually play as Rocket Raccoon.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, and Nova. You know, like characters like that, you would like, who would ever think you'd be able to play as those characters? But yeah, I mean, and there was a lot of talk about Schism. You know, I got in a bunch of different conversations. I don't know if just because I can chime in real easily or not, but it almost had its Civil War kind of feel as far as back then how the conversations used to go. Who do you side with? And no one sides with Cyclops for whatever reason. Like, I haven't had a single conversation where somebody thought Cyclops has the point of view that's correct.
Did you read Regenesis?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty even. I mean...
Well, I agree, Nick.
Yeah. Even, but we can go off on a tangent here a little bit because this is one of the things I want to talk about. But I remember reading Regenesis, just... They made Cyclops, I don't know if he's ever not been, but boy, was he whiny in that book.
It was bad writing.
Where he's begging with Emma to stay, begging Storm to stay with him, and it just seemed very, very whiny.
The way that Cyclops sort of said, please don't leave, and Wolverine was like, let's join up. So it seemed like, you know, he had the positive, he had the affirmative, and Cyclops had the negative. For that point, it seems slanted. But the reasons why people were... We can talk about this later, not to derail this. But the reasons why people stayed and some people left, I thought were really well done. But we can get into that. But as far as the panels, like I said, I didn't go to, which was kind of... I liked it a lot. The Avengers panel, the Cup of Joe, Walking Dead, and New 52. And then I watched the entire Green Lantern episode. Which was pretty fun. And I mean, there wasn't a ton of exclusives. I mean, most of the exclusives were actually small press or image books that they only had like 100 of or whatever. And if you didn't get there on preview day, then you didn't get them.
Okay.
The Marvel one, the Schism one, I could have walked away with 40 of them if I wanted to. They were giving those away. But Marvel's whole focus seemed to be on the Avengers movie.
Right, and, which is weird because, you know, that's, what, 8 months away?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were handing out Avengers movie T-shirts. Their whole, I can't call it a booth. Their whole stage was Avengers movie themed. The Cup of Joe had a lot of Avengers movie drops in it. That was where they were coming from for whatever reason. So,
they did that last year too with Thor. I remember the big Thor throne everybody was sitting in and stuff.
This was the equivalent. You know, they had a big shield display where they had actors up there that you could... it's like you were in Shield HQ. So, you know, overall, good time. And I go there to shop.
Yeah, and you were talking about some of the books you were seeing before.
Yeah. As far as...
The action.
The action and the detectives.
$200,000.
Oh, yeah, there were some big, you know, big books. I'd never seen a detective number one in person before. So that was a lot of fun. I've seen some 27s and some action ones and Marvel ones. Those to me are like the big books. But the other one that I don't get to see that often, or I've never seen in person at least, is Detective Number One with Yellow Claw. That's a cool book. You know, like, that's essentially the first DC book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The namesake book. I mean, you know, like, we saw Rob Liefeld a million times, and people...
his big announcement.
Like, getting any guff at all. Like, people seemed like they were down with him. I talked to a number of people that said that, you know, he's the nicest guy and whatever. He can't draw feet, but he's just the nicest guy.
Poor hands.
Give and take.
Maybe that's why he's been around so long, just... He is a nice guy, whereas opposed to the people that are real jerks. You know.
Well, and I've heard, like, one of these things in the last few years with his comeback is he's had kind of a middle-aged, like, rethinking priorities, and he seems to be more genuine with this comeback. Like, art criticisms aside, he's treating people better. He's trying hard to be more professional, more on time.
Well, yeah, back in the day when he was with Marvel doing X-Force, he was just a jackass.
Yeah.
I think he was younger, and, you know, that, I think that was the whole, like, movement at that time is we're better than you, and we're going to start our own business, and it's about being loud and crazy and whatever. And I think now you just can't be that because you'll, you know, with the internet being what it is, you'll end up being John Byrne. Yeah. Everything you say lives forever, and it will be used against you in perpetuity. So I think that I see him on Twitter. He basically just kisses everybody's butts.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a quick question before we move on, Nick, just about those Golden Age books you saw. Did you by chance see any of that good stuff that was unslabbed?
Not at all. Every bit of it was slabbed. Anything Golden Age of any you know, notoriety, slabbed.
What about Silver Age?
That's 50-50. Okay. You know, I bought some Silver Age stuff, and I bought it unslabbed because I can usually get a better price that way.
Are you... where do you stand on that? Because I'm definitely an unslabbed kind of guy, but I know that you can't get anything good like that. So I was just curious.
I have a lot of books. Most of my Silver Age books are unslabbed. I have a few Silver Age books that are slabbed. Like the first Teen Titans, first Wild West. But all my bigger books, like my first Justice League, my first Adam, my first Hawkman, they're all unslabbed.
Did you slab your own, or did you buy them that way?
I have slabbed two books, The Brave and the Bold, because it was pretty good. It ended up getting an 8, which I thought it would be better, but you never know.
Right.
And then I got a New Teen Titans number 2 slabbed, because that's like a 9. I was pretty happy with that. I don't have any problem with it. I just don't do it out of laziness, mostly.
Right.
I'm never going to read those books, ever, 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 because I have them all... traded. I have, you know, hardcovers and masterpieces and whatever. I mean, I don't know why I would want to read those books.
Right. No, I understand that. I was just curious.
Yeah, most of my hardcover versions of those books are actually the coloring is cleaned up quite a bit, so they it's a better reading experience on top of that.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. Like, you know, anything Bronze Age and Silver Age I have, I don't read it, but there's just something about the slabbing that I just don't like, so...
Yeah, it's ideological with some people. I mean, I kind of get that, but for me, it's like, I can get the same reading experience out of a great hardcover that I can buy and then keep those books, you know, nice and pristine as, like, historical documents, essentially.
Cool. Wow. I never looked at it that way. That's
holy
a good,
cow.
That's actually a good point of view. I like that, Nick.
Puts all this in a different perspective.
So, yeah, New York, good time, a lot of costumes, and a lot of deals. I mean, I started going to cons about 12 years ago, and the collector market right now is just rife for picking stuff up.
Gotta love that bad economy.
I know.
I thought it was interesting the different types of costumes that the people were wearing, that it wasn't just like comic books or even just anime. Like, I even saw that that Cartoon Network show, that Adventure Time. Like,
Adventure Time,
a bunch of people dressed in that.
Oh, I mean, hundreds of people dressed like that. In fact, Adventure Time had a huge presence at the show. There was probably a 30-foot balloon of the dog. they had, all throughout the con, they must have been a sponsor. All throughout the con, they had, like, pull-out things for the show. Like, they went crazy for it.
And that show has a huge fan base, I'm finding online. They're very... You know, they're there, but you have to be in the right places for them. But, like, when you see a conversation online about Adventure Time, it's huge. It just goes on forever.
I've never seen the show, and then after seeing the presence they had at the con, like, I had the conversation with a couple people that I'm like, I am definitely going to check it out.
It is really hilarious. It is one of the
looks fun.
Yeah, it's one of the few good, like, kids cartoons that's still really enjoyable for adults. It's very nostalgic.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, the money I spent in the comics was almost, you know, the food is comparable.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that was one of your posts, you know, New York, great place to visit, wouldn't want to live here.
I went to Gordon Ramsay's restaurant, the London Hotel. Definitely the most expensive meal I've ever had in my life.
Well, yeah, that's part of your problem, Nick, if you go places like that.
That was going to be my question.
It was the biggest thing you could get. I got the 8-course tasting menu from the chef's tasting, and then wine pairing.
Well, that was going to be my question was, you know, do you prefer to eat places?
But you can write that off for work. Or, right?
How was Burger King there?
I went to Subway a lot, actually, because one of the guys that I met up with is a blogger for Mattel, and he does a Pendragon's Post, which is the, I don't know if you guys are He-Man fans, but it's the He-Man blog. And he does a vegetarian blog that he does a comic book and vegan like mashup. Like every post is about, like, it's the history of a superhero, and then he ties it into some kind of vegan recipe.
Wow.
It's crazy. Wow. It's pretty cool. But nonetheless, I had to eat, you know, at places that were animal friendly. I mean, I was eating animals, but
double the meat.
Foie gras for dinner, so what do I care?
There you go. Okay, well, let's segue in with a little bit. We talked about X-Men, the schism, end of schism, and the beginning of Regenesis. Heath Miller. I thought it was 33. I'm like, why would they make an Isaac Redman action figure? Okay.
Yeah, I had to go all the way out to New York to find a McFarlane Steelers figure that I needed.
Very good. But what did everybody think about schism and Regenesis? I kind of gave my just opinion on how the treatment of Cyclops, but anybody else have any thoughts about it?
We have any Marvel?
No, but I certainly understand after Nick was saying, you know, a lot of people taking Wolverine's side. I think ideologically, I think I fall in the center. I think they both make very compelling arguments, and it's kind of one of the things I liked about Civil War when that got started. Is, you know, while I thought Cap's side was the one I favored, like, I could understand Iron Man's side, and I think this one, you know, each guy has a lot of pluses. I think the failure for me is that I felt kind of what Colin was saying is the way they wrote Cyclops right after the split seemed to totally derail all of the character building that we've discussed in the last few podcasts about how they've made him a strong leader and an assertive leader, like very sure of himself, you know, doing everything he can, but at the same time he's the one making the sacrifices. Like, he's like, you know, somebody's got to make these sacrifices for mutants. None of you want to do it. I'm going to do it. And it felt like that's again what he was doing here, but it came across kind of like Colin was saying, is he's begging people to stay, whereas Wolverine's like going up and say, hey, come join my team. It's going to be way more fun. So I was a little disappointed in that. I kind of...
Does it sound like Wolverine?
Because they had more compelling sides. I thought it would be more, like, kind of gut-wrenching decisions and things. And I was a little let down on that. But I'm also more excited about this than I had been, you know, about a month ago. Like, I think it's a shot in the arm that the X-Men franchise needs right now. Hopefully it'll work with the relaunch. We'll find out next week with the start of it with Wolverine, but that was my only little minor gripe.
How were the feelings of about Schism altogether, though? I mean,
well, my problem with it was 9 issues basically if you include the Prelude book, and it so much of it was not relevant, and so much of it was unexplained. Like, Quentin Quire, very interesting person. He's on Wolverine's team. He's showing, you know, he's on the cover of Wolverine number 2, but they never explained who he is. And I guess he's from Morrison's run, but they've never given you much to go on with him, you know, in that book itself. But also,
Do you want me to earn my spot? Do you have any questions?
No. But I'm just saying it's up to Marvel to explain who he is. Because they've introduced this character, and all you know is that they kidnapped him and bound him, and Wolverine took him with him, but you don't know why. You don't...
I understand what you're saying, because they're trying to spin this as a great jumping on point for the X-Men. If you're going to pull someone who is slightly a bit random, because it has been almost 10 years since Grant Morrison did his X-Men run. You know, a lot of people know it, but if you're trying to capture new readers, I understand your point of view. It would probably make sense to give him a little more...
Explain who he is. Yeah. You know. But,
No?
No, go ahead, Nick. Who is Quentin Quire?
No, I mean, only if you want to know.
No.
yeah, let's
He's
have
a
it.
Jerk.
Right. Well, I mean, you got that. He has some sort of mind control power.
He's an Omega-level mutant with telepathy and telekinesis equal to Jean Grey. Yeah.
Okay.
He was Kid Omega, and he wore a shirt that said Magneto was right, which actually I wear around as well.
So he's that's why they had to kidnap him, because he would have stayed with them.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's like an evil mutant in the making, and but he's more of just like, he doesn't have the brains to pull anything off. He's just kind of like one of those punk kids that's into, you know, the bad stuff just because it's more fun.
Okay.
It's like one of them little emo kids.
Now, I will say, I've read I read the entire first Wolverine, the X-Men, that ships next week. And I read the prequel that they had online of the Uncanny X-Men with the new number one. I love the current one. It says final issue on it. It's like, wow, for a whole 3 or 4 weeks. But the Wolverine book was a lot of fun. If you're looking for fun, Bocciolo X-Men, it was a lot of fun. Basically, the idea is Wolverine and Beast have rebuilt the mansion and added a lot of different things. There's no more danger room, but the danger room is kind of present throughout the whole house. But the fun thing is it's him and Kitty. Kitty's the headmistress, and the state agency to license them shows up, and they take a tour, and of course everything goes completely wrong. It was a lot of fun. Really, really good book. The prequel for The Uncanny that I read, it was just, I think, a little 5 or 6 pager. Was just a little confusing, where apparently Mr. Sinister has been behind the Sentinel in San Francisco this whole time, and he's using that now to launch an attack. Oh, Celestial. Yeah, and he's using that to launch an attack on Utopia, which didn't make any sense to me at all, especially because the last time I saw Mr. Sinister, it was a woman. So,
he was taking over her body, though.
Oh, okay. But so I was very confused by all that. So,
does anybody have any issues with... of the reasons why anyone ended up with anybody? But did it all seem in character?
Yes and no. I really thought Storm was going to go with Wolverine. I forget the compelling argument Scott made other than don't leave me with all these bad people.
It was a good argument. Again, it's one of those, if he had been written a little better, it would have been the most powerful thing, because he's basically, it kind of sets Scott up as a tragic hero in the making. Like, he's just being set up for a horribly tragic downfall, I think, because he's
his quote is, look who's going to be at my side: Magneto, Namor, Danger, Dr. Nemesis, Emma, even Peter and his sister. That is, he's got super villains.
Yeah. Right, but that led me to read that as maybe you're on the wrong side.
No, I think it was, I need you here to save me from myself. Like,
yes.
I mean, he needs an angel, like a conscience. Like, you know, he needs her because she represents everything. You know, besides Kitty Pryde, Storm represents everything that is wholesome and good about Xavier's dream. And since Kitty's leaving, it's like he needs somebody to remind him of everything good about what he's doing.
Okay.
Because
I read that just as maybe, you know, obviously this is the wrong side. If all the villains are on it, maybe
because
that's
his pragmatic stand causes him to make so many, like, one decision after another that kind of skates that line.
He needs an optimist. He needs somebody that actually isn't just making utilitarian decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that's Storm's role.
The only one that I really thought was kind of out of character, at least until the very end, was the Iceman, because they're kind of positioning Iceman as Wolverine's number two, I think, to return Iceman to a place of prominence. But it's like, there was no reason for him to go other than, oh, you brought beer. Okay, you know, like, that one kind of felt a little weak to me. But I loved all the reasons and rationales.
Beast is my favorite. The whole time that this is coming, you know, we knew this about this months ago, Wolverine starting a school, and I'm like, the guy perpetually in the last 10 years of the comic being a school never taught any kids. You know, he was kept getting yelled at for never doing that. And he's leaving for the exact same reasons that Beast left, you know, maybe a year ago. And the reason that X-Factor left. I mean, those two, they're sort of the ones that left before, you know, I mean, not sort of, but they're the ones that made this decision before even Wolverine did. But yeah, Beast says to, did you see the, what's her name from Sword?
Yes, that was great.
That was interesting, yes.
But yeah, he says,
no uproar about that on the interwebs. What's up with that?
I know,
that?
Right? And that's inference. But yeah, he says to her, I'm going to help Logan run a school. By which I mean I'm actually going to be running the school. I love that.
Yeah. I also liked how it set up X-Factor and made sense for Havoc and Polaris joining X-Factor.
Yeah, which makes no sense other
it
than
makes,
that.
Right,
now it
absolutely.
Does a little bit.
Absolutely.
This week's?
Yeah.
I do have to say the other thing about the issue that I wasn't sure I was going to like, and as Colin said, as I read it, I would probably like it and it would make more sense, was juxtaposing actually going and having the conversations with the tribal, you know, trial by combat that they were showing Cyclops and Wolverine doing, like making it a very primal, choosing sides, who's the strongest, and I thought a lot of that was really cool.
Yeah, but then at the end when they show who was on each team, it's like, wow, like 4 people went with Wolverine and 80 went with Cyclops. It's like, okay. Also interesting, like all of the young X-Men went with Wolverine, where all of Generation Hope stayed, which you'd think
would be
Generation,
the other way around.
Yeah, would have been the other
Hope
way.
Seems to hate Cyclops.
Yeah.
And yet she's sticking around.
And the new or young X-Men had probably been through all the training and didn't need it, so.
Well, I think the young X-Men, I mean, the difference is them being able to have real lives and not be soldiers and watch people die. I don't think that the Five Lights, or whatever they're called, have actually experienced quite the horror the young X-Men have. So, and they were lured in under the promise of it being a school initially, and then that was ripped under them, and then they got to watch all their friends die. So I could see them wanting to go back to what they were promised.
I give it less than a year, though, and Utopia will probably be gone, and they'll be in Australia or someplace like that.
Brings back Gateway.
Yeah.
Canada.
I think Utopia has just about run its course, and so I see something really bad happening with that.
Well, it just got attacked by the greatest sentinel of all that kind of went down pretty easy.
But it has Namor as a protector.
Well, that was the sentinel was the big thing, and it I don't know, like, it was the big bad, kind of like in Fear Itself, the big bad turned out not to be so much.
I think in both books, the big bad was the plot, and
the
day, like in Schism, it was the fighting between the two. The Sentinel was just something to...
I really do hope, though, they do more with these children Hellfire Club, because they're just such great villains.
It's in Wolverine,
okay,
so
cool.
I don't know, and I'm guessing it'll probably be in
Utopia.
So they
don't just disappear.
He's still around. At least the main one.
Didn't Wolverine and X-Men come out this week?
No, next week. I know, we're getting 2-week previews now.
Okay.
Aha. Uh-huh. No Daredevil this week either. Because
I was like, I thought it was out today.
Okay. Now. Walking Dead season premiere. Here we should talk about that a little bit. I think it's safe enough that we're not spoiling or anything if we talk about it. But how many people watched?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't hang your head in shame.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
But go ahead and spoil
it. Oh, no. We won't spoil anything, but what did everybody think?
I really liked it. I haven't read any of the books. I've never...
Okay.
I've read, like, the first issue, and after that...
Well, then you saw the first episode.
Right, so. Exactly. I read the first issue, but I read that after I had seen the first 4 episodes of the show, and I thought, I don't know if I want to continue reading this because I like what's going on in the show, and I know that they diverge. Kirkman had talked a lot about how
they
have a lot,
a lot
of different opportunities. I thought it was really great. I I was disappointed, but only because I made the mistake of thinking that it was a full 2 hours and not just 90 minutes or an hour and a half. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. I liked what they're doing with the characters. I feel like it's kind of inevitable that they're getting to this whole everyone's going to fight with each other idea. I mean, there was sort of a plot element in the first season, but it wasn't as pronounced as now what's going on here.
Well, it's fun because if you've been reading, not to ruin everything, anything. Well, it's not going to give anything away, but Shane doesn't survive the first graphic novel.
Right. And I
so the fact that he's still on the show is a level of uncertainty because you don't know what he's going to do because he shouldn't be there.
Which one's Shane?
He's the best friend. Yeah.
He's the cop, the jerk.
Right.
Cop's best friend.
Right. He doesn't survive the first book, so it's very. But then you have stuff like the Andrea stuff is, I think, pretty true.
Okay.
Is she the blonde?
Yeah. Yes. And then when all of a sudden it went, when the church appeared, all of a sudden it's kind of neat from reading the books. There's a whole lot of ways that could have gone. So you're watching it with anticipation because one of the characters that's been in it recently was a black minister. So it was a case of, are they going to meet him now? And things like that. So I think that's been kind of interesting. And now seeing the preview for the next episode, having read the books, you see where it's going now.
Did you notice that they said coming this season, not coming next week before the previews?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I didn't.
That.
Okay.
Yeah, so they didn't say when.
Well, it's going to happen, though. The fact that he's running with Carl, really has to lead to where the book took the next step.
I'm in the same boat as Ryan in terms of reading. I've read the first issue. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, I did. I'm sorry.
I was disappointed in the episode just because of so much hype around it that I was. Because I didn't watch it until last night, so I heard, my God, it's great, it's so tense, they're so this, they're so that. I thought the herd scene would have been better 3 or 4 issues down, because you never kill a main character on the first episode of an issue. Of a season, right? So there was no tension there. Like, it's like, nobody's going to die.
Well, I mean, you didn't know about the guy when he got hurt, because, again, he's not in the books.
Right.
So he could be written off easily. But
the last 5 minutes were awesome.
Yeah.
Or the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah,
whatever.
Minutes.
When his son got shot.
I was trying not to say that. Shane's
I totally forgot about Shane.
Yeah.
I listened to the Kirkman panel on Saturday about the show, and one of the questions was, do you ever get an idea and not know where to put it, in the comic or put it in the TV series? And he said that the TV series and the comic both happen to be called Walking Dead. That's about it from this point on. Hmm. That don't think when you see something, you're going to know what's going to happen. He goes, it's like a major departure, and he's not using the comics as source material anymore. That he's going to throw a little couple red herrings out to the readers. But other than that, don't expect things to go along a certain, you know, line.
Well, did anybody watch that show after The Walking Dead
called
The Talking Dead?
They thought they were clever.
That was clever.
It's a great podcast that Hardwick does called The Nerdist, too.
Oh. But
yeah, but I mean, The Talking Dead, he said something very similar as to where the TV show and the comic book were going to be two separate entities.
Yeah.
And I basically loved the season premiere. I really did.
Yeah, I agree. I actually, oddly enough, for a comics podcast, we don't seem to have a lot of Walking Dead readers amongst us. I've heard nothing but praise for The Walking Dead since it's been out. Now, I will say I am generally not a horror guy, not a zombie guy. So I was like, yeah, it's zombies. It might be the greatest thing ever. But it's still zombies, so I never really, you know, and I love Kirkman, but it was like, for me personally, I could never get past the zombies. And then I saw the show last season, and I'm like, you know, I'll give it a chance, because, you know, I like to support comic books being, you know, brought to other media just because, you know, I love comics. So I start watching it, and I thought last season was amazing. It just blew my mind. It was nothing like I thought it would be. And then, you know, the season was so short, I had kind of forgot about it. Then seeing this season, I thought picked right back up where it left off. The tension was great. You know, I love, you know, like you guys were saying, how the characters, like it's starting to, the stress is starting to get to them. There are cracks appearing. They're not a big happy family. And, you know, I just loved it. It actually prompted me this week to pick up like the first hardcover.
And, you know, I flipped through one of the trades, I read about the first issue's worth. Love that, and it's just, I'm really excited about it, and it kind of, just the show being so good has really prompted me to, you know, pick up the series and, you know, see what it's all about, and I think that's probably the highest praise you can give a show like that, is if it makes you come into the shop and say, hey, I saw this, zombies are so not my thing, but this was just so amazing that I need to read this and, you know, see where it's going.
And I think it's the same reason Colin talked me into it, because it's not a zombie book.
Right.
It's a book that uses zombies as a plot tool. Yeah.
Well, watching the show, what it really kind of strikes me at, it has way more in common with me to things like The Road Warrior, like post-apocalyptic survival, than that just happens to use zombie. What did you say? Use zombies as the threat.
Mm-hmm.
That constant.
Zombies are the setting.
Right. And, you know, looking at it in that light, like, you know, it's no wonder I love it, because I love that kind of post, you know, I was a child of the 80s when post-nuclear apocalypse stuff was all over the place.
Oh, that's so interesting that you bring that up, because, like, child of the 80s, you know, things like Star Wars, where the Empire was the big bad, zombies gaining popularity in this era, I think, is directly linked to us as a people's common enemy being more like the unknown army of terrorists that could be anywhere, or terrorists that live among us. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. You could have a whole 3 hour
I like
long
the analog to terrorism, because terrorists don't have technology that's better than us. They don't necessarily have, you know, the means, but their sheer numbers and their determination. Yeah. Their unflinching, singular-mindedness. I mean, that's a good analog.
It's definitely, there's a whole societal reason, you know, that zombies are an it thing right now. You know, I don't know enough sociology to really get into it, but I kind of understand it. Like, you know, there are these things that pop up, and it's like a social consciousness kind of thing that, you know, fear, societal fears that bring these things, you know, up. But it's like, you know, kind of seeing it for that, and it's not just strictly survival horror. There's a lot more to it.
So a question I had about it was, is The Walking Dead, the zombies themselves, are they supposed to be intelligent? Because I thought they were stupid in the first
season. I think what they said,
like, just this new random
zombie. Well, they're not smart, but basically it was like they're just, and then when they get the scent, all of a sudden they're faster, more aggressive.
Because They were opening doors. They were looking in cars. I mean, they were doing things that seemed more of a.
Well, they've gotten indoors. I mean, they still have, I guess, the remnants of the human.
Yeah. But they seem to be more investigative, looking around.
That one
going
that
in places.
Yeah, the one that got in the RV was a little more.
RV was, she dropped that and made the noise.
Right, but him coming in, kind of looking around and stuff. That was something I've never seen a zombie do. Yeah,
maybe he was a camper in his previous life.
Could be.
Maybe he was just so familiar with RVs.
Winnebago Sam. It was on a shirt. Yeah.
In the season finale of the last season, the doctor at the CDC sort of explained that, you know, he had the X-ray of the brain, and you know, the whole higher reasoning functions of the brain turn
frontal
off
cortex.
Once the virus kicks in. Yeah, the frontal cortex. But all the instincts stay there. And I guess it's, like we were saying, it's sort of like, you know, parts of your old past are remembered. I think in the first season when Rick encounters the man and his son, and they're camping out in the house because the man just can't bring himself to kill his wife and leave the house. Even as a zombie, she's still walking around outside trying to get back into the house because she remembers where her, you know, her husband.
Has anybody checked out the webisodes that are supposed to be the life of the Bicycle Girl?
I haven't, but my fiance said that they were amazing.
Who's the Bicycle Girl?
So the first episode, the one that he shoots in the head.
Right.
Yeah, apparently they're doing a whole web series that's her life before the plague.
And for those of you who haven't seen season one, on sale now at Pittsburgh
they
Comics.
Are,
half
are.
Off.
Half off. DVDs and Blu-rays available.
You know those guys that buy, like, everything zombie, no matter what it is?
Yeah.
I'm one of them.
Oh, well, no surprise there.
Do you like
and,
vampires, too?
I've been getting Walking Dead since issue one. Kirkman is a friend of a friend. So in 2003, we went to Chicago Con and met him. And that's, like, when the book was just hitting. I had a couple issues out. So, I mean, I've been with it since the beginning, and it's one of those books that I just absolutely love, mostly because, like the same reason I liked Ecstatics, like, it was one of the very few books I didn't see things coming. You know, and that's what I really liked about it. And as it developed, it became so much less of a zombie movie, and, or a book rather, and more of a book when you strip away all the creature comforts of society and you're just left with people having to deal with people without any rules, what happens? And I think that's the fascinating part that certain post-apocalyptic, you know, stories have addressed. There was a TV show called Jeremiah that was short-lived that I really enjoyed that was a similar kind of world-building in the midst of a post-apocalyptic society.
Red Dawn.
Yeah, Red Dawn.
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies of all time.
With the characters, I'm really interested to see where they're going to take them this season. I mean, one of my favorite characters is Daryl. And is he in the books?
No, he's actually not in the book.
See, that's what I had heard, and I wasn't sure, but I think he's a great character. You know, the first time we saw him in the first season, you know, he was just like his brother. They wouldn't trust him to do anything, but now, you know, in the second episode, you know, I mean, obviously they have to band together, they have to trust each other because they don't have anybody else.
And what do you think about him saving the man that actually left his brother up on a rooftop two times in one episode?
Exactly, and that's, I'm wondering, you know, is he doing this out of necessity, or is he sort of changed? You know, maybe he wasn't as awful as his brother was, you know.
No.
Maybe that was sort of imprinted.
Yeah, they seem to have a kind of love-hate relationship. Like, yeah. I think Daryl really respects Rick and, like, recognizes everything he does to save it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's kind of cool. You know, I thought it was really poignant what Lori said at the end, you know, Rick, my husband's the only one that went after your daughter.
Right.
You know, you might think he's responsible for not finding her. But it was kind of cool because, you know, Rick runs after her, and who's the first person to go with him to find? And would you, prior to that episode, would you have even thought, you know, Daryl, his character to me would have been, I'm not going in the, you know, my survival is number one, and here he is.
Gone off by himself.
Yeah, and here he is, like, helping Rick find the little girl. I thought it was a very cool.
You totally
character.
Ruined the whole episode.
I zoned out.
Okay.
Wasn't Daryl's brother? Wasn't he given chocolate covered pretzels by in the mall?
Yes. Would you like a chocolate covered pretzel? Because
I wouldn't be given one,
Larry.
Nick and I are Nick and Jeremy and I are getting a Mallrats reference. I don't remember that actor's name or the character's name, but also
Ben
just
Affleck.
No. The thing that I liked most about Daryl in the episode was, you know, first shot of the crowd, and he's riding a, you know, motorcycle way out in front
big
of everybody.
Chopper,
big chopper in front of the RV. You know, everyone else is huddled in, you know, four walls on wheels, and he's just like, no, I'll ride through zombies on a chopper, big deal.
But that made sense, because he was kind of the scout.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like,
exactly.
Especially when I got to that big pile. That was kind of his thing, was he's the, find the path, and it made sense to be on a motorcycle.
I mean, like, it makes sense for that, but I just think it makes sense with his character, too. I mean, he's not full of himself, but he's very confident, too.
Well, and it's kind of interesting, because you can kind of see, you know, Rick has a very clear role in the group, Daryl has a clear role, Dale has a clear role, but, like, the other guys, it's like, they're just kind of that, you know. Glenn has a role as kind of a scrounger, but it's like,
what's,
you know,
doing?
What's Shane? You know, it's like he's been emasculated.
He's supposed to be dead.
He's been but now he's just been emasculated. It's like,
because he was called Short Round.
Yeah,
that's, you know, with T-Dog too. I keep wondering where they're going to go with T-Dog, and that almost seemed like what they were doing in the last episode last season was, you know, let's pare away some characters that aren't really going anywhere, maybe.
Something I thought that could be actually cool with that is to show him, you know, you're thinking the constant threat is zombies, constant threat is zombies. Now he's got this horrible flesh wound. Watch it, like, become infected and become some, you know, and just to kind of show that, hey, zombies aren't the only thing we have to worry about. Like, with the water.
Yeah.
You know, that was really cool.
What happened with the water?
They just that they, you know,
found some.
They didn't have water. You know, you, like, the kind of those little details you don't think about, you know, with the survival thing. You know, they're driving cross country and
need supplies.
Yeah.
And something else with the, you know, in between this season and last season, there was a big to do with the business and Frank Darabont departing and whether or not they were going to have enough money to keep the same level of effects. And I thought the special effects in this episode were, you know, on par with or sometimes better than last season.
Yeah. You don't really need a lot.
No.
I mean, it's mostly set dressing.
Prosthetics. Yeah.
That one dude got hurt was kind of cheesy. the dude that cut his arm.
Well, yeah,
T-Dog, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty bad. I mean, that looked like somebody squirted a ketchup packet out of his elbow.
Maybe it was just because that kind of wound makes me flinch, but I was like, ugh.
The blood itself,
yeah.
They could have used a little more work to make it look a little more realistic. It was a little too orange, but... That's my bio.
All right.
Talking, so.
That's
tell us the blood is
okay.
Not
how did The Walking Dead not smell that? I mean, they probably...
Well, I was going to say that was the one thing that bothered me.
They
was,
were probably like 25.
Didn't he cut his arm like that?
Don't ruin it all.
But
eventually,
didn't
they
grab the dead bodies? And,
But he was exposed for a good 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Well, they did hang around for a little while.
You would think they would try to employ more of the scent masking just in general, like what they did, you know, when they went into
season.
The planet.
Yeah, but nobody's really worrying about it like they did in the first season.
Right.
Whenever they put all that blood and guts from that first zombie from when they first did the scent masking, they had gloves on, everything else. They didn't want it touching their skin. Now it seems like it doesn't matter.
I have to say one of my favorite moments is they're starting... It's at the very beginning of the episode, they're driving down the road and everything's good, and then they get to that cluster of vehicles.
Awful
and it's just,
pile
of that was just a great scene when they just start to suddenly slow down to like 5 miles an hour to navigate through.
My favorite part was probably when they verified that it wasn't the girl that the Walking Dead had killed.
that was
cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, to let Shane back in the group. Switching gears, a video game, I think, came out yesterday. That's some, you know, Nick, Fezzes are cool. but a video game came out yesterday that's gotten a lot of talk, a lot of play, a lot of sleepy people. And apparently Shane's already played it for about 10 hours. So, Arkham City.
Just anybody who played the first game would appreciate this one. It's a lot of the same stuff. I'm not going to give anything away. Just the voice acting is great. The graphics are great. Just a real good, you know, it keeps you on your toes. The first 5 minutes, I was disoriented in the game. No idea what's going on because you don't have a set story to go on. You can do the main storyline, but there's all these side quests and different things, and you go out all these different, instead of like Riddler challenges, you like trophies. Now there's like challenge. You got to figure out how to, the trophies are like locked in a little bubble. You have to figure out how to, you know, like it's like a mini game. You have to figure out how to get them out. Like, there's one where you have to hit buttons in certain ways. Like, how am I going to hit them all in the same time or whatever? It's just really fun. The voice acting is great.
Does it make you feel like you're Batman?
Of course. I mean, you run and jump off a building and there's a helicopter above you. You grab on a helicopter, you swing off of it, you know, and it's just fantastic. You can actually interrogate people in this game. You go up to them and grab by their throat and you get the information out of them where you want to go next. And it's really fun. And I got all the download content, reserved it from 2 or 3 different places to get all the extra stuff. And
so you bought it like Best Buy, GameStop, to get Robin and Catwoman.
I did actually.
Wow,
and then,
that's hardcore.
And then I sold the regular version to a friend.
Oh, and just kept the DLC.
I kept the DLC. I gave him $10 off, and I got the collector edition with the statue, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I couldn't tell the weight of it from the picture, but it looks just like a black and white with a modified base.
Yeah, okay. It's not. I have a Batman Begins statue from where he's on top of the Bat Signal, and it's pretty much like the same thing. It's like it's not resin or plaster or anything. It's like a plastic, you know. It's like a hard plastic, but it's pretty.
Like a 6-inch statue, right?
Yeah, I mean it's at least I don't know.
Yeah,
but if you're listening at home, you held his hands about 6-8 inches apart.
Yeah, it's detailed, it's pretty, and you know it's a little lightweight, but it fits in with my, you know, everything I got up there. I have a black and white Joker statue, and it fits in right next to that.
Cool.
So, one thing I hated about Arkham Asylum was you had to run around with Bat Vision or whatever they called that all the time.
Yeah.
Is that the same in this game?
It's in there. You don't have to all the time, but it's in there. They modified it a lot, because
the first game, it was basically just leave that on and just run around.
Yeah.
And, like, you never saw the color and all the detail of the environment because you were in Bat Vision looking for
They have that.
Clues
plus,
all the time.
And whenever you're like on your Catwoman, she has Thief mode. It's not quite as detailed. You can't see their skeletons and you can't see their weapons, but... You get like a vague idea of where somebody is through a wall.
Do you get to see her in a bra like the comic book?
No, but she's fantastic in the game, though. She's got a camel toe in one of the costumes.
And there goes that G-rated.
No,
there were a lot of people coming in today talking about it.
It's Tim Drake, but like in the game, he looks more like just the Arkham City version. He looks a lot like Damian. He has a hood with the cape. But you can also get the Red Robin like skin. Looks fantastic. It's probably my favorite of the skin so far.
Now, how about Nightwing? Because I saw some preview pictures of Nightwing. Is this going to be DLC?
Yeah. Picking up at the Midnight, you can pre-order all the... It's like a season pass where you get all the DLC. And there was the Nightwing pack. There's a Robin pack and all that stuff. I don't know. They all come out like November, different times of November.
I'm going to spend so much money on DLC when I get this game.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I know you're a huge Green Lantern fan as well. Did you buy the Green Lantern game?
I did. Actually, that was the only game I've ever got all 40 achievement points on.
Was it good? Because
it was fun. I played it. It was fun, but... it's not hard. I played on hard the first way through, got all 40 achievements during my first gameplay.
Yeah, the Captain America game that came out this summer is a lot of fun. I mean, it's not graphically great, it's not super compelling, but you get to run around, beat the crap out of agents, and you get to throw the shield. I mean, if you can throw the shield, I'm in.
That's the Green Lantern game. It's just, all it is, it's just manhunter after manhunter. It's almost like a side scroll. It's like, you have to go here, but if you don't do this, you can't go there. Like, you have to do it. Everything's set. But you have some pretty cool ring powers. You can make, like, a mech suit go and just start smashing manhunters. And you get this little bit of the yellow energy, the yellow power battery and all that stuff. It's pretty good, though.
One of the cool things about with Arkham City, they had a pretty good selection of his rogue gallery.
Yeah.
I thought Two-Face, Penguin, the Joker's in there. You said you got to Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, actually, I didn't get to him yet. I got to the part where... I went to go find him, and then I interrogated him.
They keep talking about him.
Yeah. They also got a lot of, like subplots. Like, as you're flying over the city, you can, like, listen into, like, people's conversations, and I hear them saying, like, oh, Catwoman showed up over at Two-Face's place. You know, I thought she was a villain. How come Batman helped her out? I thought she was a thief like you are.
Yeah, I thought the little discussions were... And the main bad guy, it seems, is Hugo Strange.
Yeah, I think there's going to be more than that. I think they're playing much.
Yeah,
too
I think that, too.
But I like Hugo, though. I found... Crime Alley, and there's an outline where Bruce's parents were killed.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
And I've never seen that in the trailer. And you push a button, and it says you pay your respects, and Bruce, like, drops down, and, like, he drops his head down for, like 2 minutes. It's, like, 2 full minutes of him just, like, in the camera, like, slowly goes around, and then Hugo left a tape and flowers for Bruce, because he knows who he is. He left a tape saying, you know, hey, does it depress you? You're standing right where your parents died. It's pretty messed up, actually. Yeah. But
wait, Hugo Strange is in the game?
He's, like, cool. He's like the warden of Arkham City.
Yeah.
That's my Halloween costume. That's Hugo Strange.
That's great.
What a bald guy with glasses. That's a stretch.
You know, it was a stretch, but hey. I did what I could. I said, hey, this will work.
Are you going to be Hugo Strange as Batman?
Yes. I ordered the Batman costume. I just won't put on the cowl.
And you still let him into your comic book store.
What?
You let him win more than everybody every day.
That's one of those characters that I'm glad that he's getting play in this game, because I was kind of hoping that he would be in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Well, he's been cast, so yeah.
What?
Oh! Yeah. No, because I did an internet search for pictures to explain to people who I was being, and someone has been cast as Hugo Strange in the movie.
I was hoping to have Harley in
Arkham or Dark Knight Rises. I was hoping she would be like a psychiatrist at Arkham Asylum.
Or follow up or something. Yeah.
I saw there's going to be a prologue in front of Mission Impossible for a 6-minute prologue for the Dark Knight Rises in front of Mission Impossible.
I buy my ticket for Mission Impossible, stay for the prologue, and then go see another movie or something.
And I'm really happy about the voice acting in Arkham City, though, because they bring back a lot of the animated series cast.
Well, Mark Hamill does a lot.
Mark Hamill, Kevin Conroy. Yep. They got the same Harley voice.
Yep.
Yeah.
They got.
Did you hear the news about Mark Hamill today?
Yep.
But he had said that before this
he's
game came
out. He's not going to be the Joker anymore.
He said this was going to be his last portrayal of the Joker.
Yeah, he said that. That was months ago. I heard that a long time ago. Yeah. When they first marked Arkham City.
He's Brett Favre in it.
Yeah, until they put the check in front of him.
Yeah.
It's those, and everything else
dries up.
Yeah. Right, and it's because of the cartoon show, but, you know, when I play Arkham Asylum, I haven't gotten Arkham City yet, but, like, those are the iconic voices that I think of. Like, I think of Kevin Conroy as Batman, I think of Mark Hamill as the Joker. Even when I read the comics, you know, it depends on the theme or the style of the comic, you know, like, if it's kind of cartoony, like Brave and the Bold, then obviously I'm going for that kind of
Do
thing.
Do you actually hear different voices in your head while you're reading? Because you don't want to see your
voices. Yeah, no.
Yeah, speaking of the animated series, anybody pick up Year One?
I haven't watched it yet.
Mine's coming. Mine will be here Friday.
I didn't like the voices in it, but I liked Jim Gordon. It was like it reminded me of Sin City, how Brian he was Cranston, like, I forget the guy's name, but Bruce Willis' character in Sin City.
Right, I don't remember.
Hardigan,
yeah. He reminded me so much of him, and, like, it was fantastic. I liked how he was, but I didn't like Batman's voice. Catwoman was all right, but she looked real butchy, like a bull dyke. And shit, real short hair, real muscular.
Yeah, there goes the Jesus.
That was my own.
That was dropped so casually.
Was she an ex-prostitute in the game?
In
the movie?
Yeah, in the movie. What's happening?
In year one, she was a prostitute.
They have her there.
Everything Frank Miller does, every character is a prostitute.
Yeah. They had her friend Holly.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, she mentioned that. That yeah, you're right.
Yeah, she's never Batman, Sin City. I mean, I'm surprised Elektra wasn't a prostitute.
There was no.
Frank Miller's losing her.
I like that DC is doing so well with their animated stuff, but I guess I'm kind of turned off by the fact that they're animating stuff that's already been done. Like, I've read the book. So I don't feel like I really need to see. I guess I don't feel like I'm going to see anything new in the animated.
I kind of like that they are adapting their best stories, because it gets the people that haven't read the stories to say, oh, this is a comic? I didn't know, comics are like this. I wonder how close the comic is to the animated. They come in, they get that, and they're like,
I can see that.
Wow, this is amazing. They come back to Colin's shop and say, I just read Batman Year One. What do you got?
But I think we're wanting to see more of a original new Batman story. Even with the animated series, you saw a lot of that, but you don't see that much.
The next
anymore.
One they're doing is that Justice League Doom, which is Dwayne McDuffie's kind of final book. Story.
And I guess that's based off of Tower of Babel, the story that Mark Waid did.
I watched the preview for it. They said half it's like Tower of Babel, and the other half is like
Challenge of the Super Friends.
It was like the old, Legion of Doom.
Right.
But it's like a completely different Legion of Doom, past with Bane and
Savage
such.
And Bane and
Cheetah.
I think, is it Metallo there?
I can't remember if it's Metallo or not.
I don't remember.
One of the animated movies that I thought was really cool, had nothing to do with a little bit to do with the book, was Crisis on Infinite Earths. Because it had nothing to do with, Crisis. It had the Earths and all the multiple Earths.
Well, that was more like the Justice League.
That was based off of Morrison's Earth, too, though.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. And in his book, it was the antimatter Earth. It wasn't like a parallel.
Because they used to. That was where the term crisis originally originated. Was in the 60s JSA JLA crossovers. They called it like Crisis of Two Worlds.
Nick's nodding his agreement.
Right. Yeah.
I did good, Nick.
That's it. I got it myself. They're good reads.
But yeah, that whole story was basically Morrison's Earth 2 book, which was good. But with the
coolest depiction of Owlman ever.
Oh, yeah.
And
James Woods
was awesome in that.
Irrelevant, nothing matters.
I kept thinking of the Family Guy.
He was like a nihilist.
He wanted to be like, get out of here.
Ooh, a candy.
I've watched all the DC animated ones. I usually get them within the first few days they're out.
Yeah, I did too.
And I like them because I like seeing them, because they'll announce the next one. I'm like, I've already read that, and I'll go back and I'll read it 3 or 4 times before I even. Batman and Superman Public Enemies, the second one with the Supergirl jump.
Yeah.
It was great, but I was really sad that when they do change things, I was like, oh, I can't wait, get to see Nightwing and all them in the show, and then they cut it. Sometimes I get sad how they cut it, but at the same time, they're really good.
I think the one that I was a little more disappointed with after, because I finally got to read the book, was All-Star Superman.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot missing from it that had a lot.
That was one of the ones I never read.
The one that I thought they did really well was the Under the Hood, the Red Hood. And I thought they did really well in explaining how Jason Todd comes back without going into all the Infinite Crisis.
And it was really brutal, too, actually getting to see the Joker actually smashing his face with a sledgehammer.
So good for kids?
And I will never turn down an opportunity to sing the praises of New Frontier in any format.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's the best one.
Yeah.
That was good. Actually, my favorite was the Superman Shazam. And just because I liked the story they told, it was basically an adaptation of Judd Winnick's First Thunder, but it had the extra, what they call the DC Showcase, and it was all the extra short films.
Yeah, they were really
from other
good.
Movies, and those short films were great. The Jonah Hex one was
amazing. Yeah, the Jonah Hex one was really
good. The Catwoman one for this one was really good, too. Well,
I watched the Jonah Hex one, and I said to myself, this is just prior to the movie coming out, and I already knew that it was going to be a terrible movie.
Yeah.
What?
All I could think of was, how like easy a formula a great Jonah Hex would be.
Yeah.
And they still messed it up.
A cartoon or even like a, you know, continuing live action series Jonah Hex would be.
All you gotta do is just watch some Clint Eastwood Sergio Leone films.
Right, exactly, and yeah. Just
and you know, Scar of the Face.
Or now we can pick up All-Star Western every month at Pittsburgh Comics.
All-Star Western next week. Next week.
And you know, Megan Fox had nothing in that movie at all. Okay. Like, she just comes back out of nowhere.
The only reason they put her in it is so they could sell some tickets at some point.
That's what it is.
Well, my favorite review was that she's from the South but totally botched a Southern accent.
Yeah.
So I never saw that one. Okay, changing pace a little bit. I know Jeremy wanted to talk about this, and I think it was a good thing to talk about. It's the September sales charts, which is kind of neat and remarkable, as it's the first time in forever that DC has actually surpassed Marvel.
Congratulations.
And I just did a rough count of what I printed out. It's not a complete 300. It's... I don't know what it all is, but it's 1 through 300, then some extras. But I thought it was kind of neat just because basically DC gained 10% of market share and Marvel dropped 5, so DC beat them by 5. And they also beat them in dollar amount, only by a little bit, but I just counted, and out of the top 300, Marvel had 104 books, whereas DC had 52 plus a smattering of Vertigo and stuff. So I think that's even more remarkable.
Yeah, how many books has Marvel put out?
Well, they had 104 on this chart. That's
what
I'm saying.
In the top 300, Marvel had
104
right.
books.
Is that 104 out of 110? Is that 104 out of 200 books?
What do you mean?
But what he said.
104 titles, right?
Right, but I'm just saying comparing dollar
versus
for dollar
52.
Versus 52.
Right.
DC put out half as many books.
It is.
I don't know. But I'm just saying DC put out a lot less books and still beat them in money, and also DC only had four $3.99 books.
I'm going to be my Ben Horse and saying that this ain't going to last.
Oh, I don't think it's going to last either, but I think it's amazing.
If like that in January, then they won.
Well, of course, no, they're not going to sell 200,000 copies of a book in January.
But if they're ahead of Marvel in January.
But do you ever look... This is something I kind of look at like once every few months. I find the top 300 charts fascinating. Mm-hmm. I realize from a retail standpoint, they only tell a fraction of the story. I know there's a lot more to it. But just looking at them, it's neat to see what the trends are, despite... No matter what people say on the internet, you know, how bad books are, there are books that are in the top 10, top 20. I mean, X-Men is one of Marvel's top-selling books, and we all talk about how, you know, just from even an X-Men standpoint, it's one of the weakest titles. And yet it's a consistent... So that those kind of things fascinate me. And I've been looking at these charts since I started reading, you know, since like 95. But if you had told me that... In my lifetime, I would ever see a top 25 absolutely without a doubt dominated by DC, I would have told you were crazy. Because if you follow these charts...
Don't open it, Nick. Don't open it.
Marvel's been dominating these charts, you know, for decades.
Yeah.
Like, just the front end, you know, if you look at the top 10 every month, it's like 7 Marvel, 3 DC. That's just kind of how it's been for
but
a
this
very long.
Doesn't matter. This is like
no. It matters a lot because DC has not done this.
Yeah.
Even if it's 1 month, if things go back the way they were, they've shown they can do it. And
no, they didn't. And what are they going to relaunch every September? They're just going to launch.
Marvel does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They never do one line reboots, and they never erase continuity and just say, you know what.
One more
game. Really?
Pick and choose
oh my gosh.
Really?
I guarantee.
Mephisto just destroyed the last 20 years of Spider-Man.
I guarantee you this matters.
But they told you what he did. They said, he's erasing the marriage. It never happened. This is what went down.
No, I guarantee you this matters.
What
there
all of them
have happened? No.
Nick, are you nodding your head in agreement that this matters?
What matters? Like, do you mean the continuity change?
No, that DC could dominate the sales charts like this for a month.
Absolutely. I think it definitely matters because a lot of this stuff isn't about anything other than what change can bring.
Yeah.
It can a move like this give you a lot of buzz, give you dominance in dollars, and be able to tell a story? I mean, they've been telling their story for months, so they've dominated right. a lot of, you know, when it comes to marketing. They've dominated all the conversations, and people ended up, you know, voting with their wallets the same way. Yeah. So this is something that Marvel, I think, would normally have done. They normally do these big kind of moves, and for whatever reason, DC did it, and I think they're coming off looking like the people that are the risk takers, and they're coming off looking like the ones that are a little bit more crazy.
And I would bet you that there's a group of businessmen somewhere from Marvel who weren't worried about this because they had dominated the charts for so much. Up till August 31st, they probably thought there was no way that these sales numbers would look as overwhelming as they did.
Why should they care?
Why? Because they're getting beat by DC
1 month.
But 10% swing, Matt. I know it's going to be longer than 1 month.
But you have people coming out and buying collector's items right now. I guarantee you in January, I'll buy everybody here a trade paperback if they win the sales chart in January 2012.
But you have to understand.
I will buy everyone here a trade paperback up to $20.
Marvel Man.
I'm going to be able to get a black and white newsprint Marvel Man then.
But DC has never done this. Like, you say 10% like it's nothing. I guarantee you to the people.
10% is huge, but if you don't maintain it, it doesn't mean
anything. I think it's going to maintain because DC is giving you something fresh and new, but they haven't done what Marvel has done. Every Marvel book has gone up in price.
It'll swing back.
It makes me sick to see Marvel titles going to $3.99 and $4.99 when DC has stated $2.99.
I think Marvel's
Fantastic Four $600.
I think Marvel's problem though is they're going about it the wrong way of trying to refresh their books. Yeah. As I think DC simplified it for people, and as a customer coming in and buying Marvel comics right now, as I was telling Colin when I came in here, right now I don't really know where to go right now because I don't know if I should read the Fearless, because, you know, so they're making it complicated. I think if they restructured themselves, kind of thought this out a little bit, simplified.
But prior to even seeing these numbers, like, I've loved what DC did. But even prior to seeing these numbers, I thought, as good as we were hearing it was, I thought it wasn't this good. Yeah. It blows my mind, just from a purely dollars and cents sales point. Not even a whose stories are better. It just absolutely blows my mind how well DC did just with a sales domination for an entire month.
But you can't make a living off 1 month of sales.
No, I
but
agree.
It's a heck of a start.
I don't think Jeremy's point is that, you know, DC's planning on claiming dominance just from 1 month. Just that, at the very least, someone in Marvel / Disney hierarchy is going to take a look at those numbers and say, okay, you know, What's next? Or even people in DC hierarchy is going to say, what's next?
I think what you said is totally right, but when you said Disney, these kind of moves, these aren't Marvel and DC moves.
Right.
These are Warner Brothers and Disney moves.
Right, exactly.
You're going to see these, I mean, I really think that a lot of this stuff was designated at the top, and the reason that Marvel hasn't is because Disney has said they just bought this property. They liked where it was going. They liked the R&D mechanism as it is. And I think Warner Brothers has had this buy for quite a long period of time. They haven't seen the R&D return on investment like they thought, so they wanted to refresh the brand. So I really don't think that publishing has as much control over this stuff as everybody thinks.
And I was – Colin and I have kind of been talking off and on the last few weeks. I really think one of the major things we're going to see – as a result of DC winning this month, is Disney exerting far more control over Marvel than they had prior to this.
You're all nuts. That's my commentary from a distance. You're all nuts.
I agree with you, Jeremy. I think it is, you know, it's a big deal. I agree with Matt in some respects that it's not going to completely change everything.
Right.
And I know that's not what you're saying either. But at the very least, it is going to be one of those kind of wake-up calls, not for any one publisher, but for the industry, of saying, you know, doing something big like this could possibly pay off if you do it right. I mean, this wasn't just making new comic books. This was a marketing campaign. This was a total restructuring of how they're going to put out their books. This was new commitments in editorial
it's not even
and writing.
The books, I mean, all the other stuff, which as much as, you know, the thrust of this whole podcast and our hobby is about the comic books, it's not even a the biggest piece of the pie that these intellectual properties yield. Yeah. And the fact that Superman beach towels outsell Superman comics is something when you see this reflected in his costume and, you know, where he's about reflected in other media, that's when you'll know that this is actually a way bigger deal than simply publishing, you know, mm-hmm. 1 month dominance or any of that fun stuff. How that stuff works, it doesn't mean as much as we think it does to the parent companies. It's how they're not even looking at these month to month things as much as they're looking at how will this affect the R&D for animated series, toys, movies, birthday party, right. You know, hats, etc.
I think we'll all look back on this, you know, a few years from now, and we're going to mark the new DCU and Spider-Man One More Day as the line in the sand when Marvel and DC stopped looking at us as the target audience anymore. Because, like, I think a lot of the new DC, it's aimed at new readers, and a lot of the storytelling techniques that we were familiar with and we had enjoyed for a long time, they're not using anymore. Spider-Man One More Day, it's aimed at younger people that haven't been reading.
Well, the brand new day, the stuff yeah. after.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Where Peter Parker could mack on girls.
Yes. Yeah. But, which he didn't. He macked on one girl, and then she got a tattoo, and he went, ooh.
I'd really be interested in seeing what the actual sales numbers were. Do they list that on the top 300, Colin? Like, what the actual total sales numbers were?
You mean, like, copies that left the shop?
Yeah.
Or copies?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's the one bit of data the industry doesn't have. Like,
it's proprietary, and not only that, like, what you see in those lists, I listen to a lot of comic book podcasts, and all the comic book writers always sort of laugh off that when they talk about that stuff, because it's just a snapshot, and it's barely a piece of the whole pie.
Well, because that's what Diamond sells, right? It's not, like you said, it's not what leaves,
like,
the shops.
These are the copies that show up at Colin's door, like,
right.
The retailer orders.
Exactly. But the neat thing with this list as well, though, is every single one of these DC books went to a second print. Mm-hmm. So I know that they did.
All 52
went to second prints. They all sold out.
Legion.
Every single one of them sold through.
Some of them went to three.
Right? Some have gone to third prints. Justice League's on a fourth print, which isn't even on this chart because that was an August book. But I think that's the neat thing, is that most of the time you don't know. Like, they just announced with Point One, because there's a lot of things you can do with a point. This Point One incentive, Marvel just announced they're overshipping. Well, those overships are going to count in the sales chart. So if they only had 50,000 ordered, they're going to show 100,000 shipped. So,
which makes this list that much more impressive, because you and I were saying DC didn't do anything like that. So the DC numbers represent orders.
Was a stunt for DC.
That right,
was
but
a stunt.
That's
but
not what
sold through.
But
you know what? Even if it was 1 month out of 12 that DC took over from Marvel being the top dog.
I was batting 100.
Next year it might be next year it might be 2 months out of the 12.
That's not even
the following
like
year it might be 3 months out of the 12.
But
it's just a building point for DC to start taking over
with
Marvel.
But what Colin's saying is, like, with Point One, they're going to send him extra books that he didn't order. Marvel's just sending them. But when those numbers are reported, it's going to show up that all those free books that Marvel shipped to retailers. Yes.
Yeah. Well, no, because that wouldn't say that list is Diamond's shipping list, not sold list.
Well, these numbers are estimates. They just go by ranking.
You're not invoiced for those extra 30.
No, I'm invoiced for them at zero price.
Okay, that's
I understand. No, but I'm just saying. No, but I'm just saying. But it's going to be at a top 10 book because they're going to ship 100,000 copies.
Right.
Okay. So it's going to be a false. Right. No. But those aren't all going to sell either. All these, for the most part, have sold. They are taking returns. Here, I'm going to say if they sold out and they had to go to a second printing, people ordered them because they sold out.
There's still a lot of people out there who are buying multiple copies to sit on.
I didn't sell many at all. I didn't sell many. Like, I know I sold a couple of Justice Leagues, two copies to people at the midnight sale, so I don't even know.
Justin bought at least half of them probably in second, third.
He bought multiple copies that way, yeah.
Yeah, and
but this doesn't even affect. Second prints aren't even showing on this.
Two copies of everything is getting ongoing.
Ongoing, that's like four or five.
But the point is, they sold. They walked out of the shop.
But the other thing is, the customer you just rang up, never saw him before this.
I get.
I'm going to say I have 20 to 30 people just like
him. It's a good thing. I'm not going to.
I don't have Marvel
that.
Bringing
you guys
in new
are acting
customers.
Like DC just conquered the universe.
No, we're saying they
it's a start. No, and I'm not saying it's a start. It's a start for new people to come into our medium. But though we love.
I'm
them.
Saying. I'm saying it's a game changer. It's just something we've never seen.
So it's not a win.
It's like a slap in the face. Like the guy who's won like Student of the Month every day, you know, every year, and then this one time. He doesn't get it. It breaks his personal record because some underdog comes over.
And personally, if this causes Marvel to, like, up their game, more power. Because that's what we've all been saying.
Yeah, that's what I've been wanting.
That's all we... No, that's all we want them to do.
They already have.
It's point one with seven new series spinning out of this and four new series promoted in Fear Itself. They've already responded. With all this new stuff. They're relaunching Incredible Hulk, Uncanny X-Men.
That stuff was planned well before
no,
this was announced.
Relaunching Uncanny X-Men? No.
That might not have been, but the Hulk was, the new stuff for next year was...
I don't know, it seems like too much of a coincidence that there's so many things being restarted though all at one time, though.
I have a small...
Well, right, Nick, no, but I'm going to say,
I have a small semi-unrelated point, but I think it kind of adds to the argument. Now, we're talking about how, you know, Jeremy, you said that maybe this will get Marvel to do... something different, and it's not a big something different, but like I like Marvel characters. I would like to buy Marvel books. Now I know I've been very public in me decrying Marvel on this podcast, but I would
you
like
did
to
sign
point,
up for a Marvel book though on Comixology.
See,
I
that's
saw
what
that.
I'm getting at. Yeah. See,
Hater
that's,
Part Two.
Ooh, I now okay. I would like a point to jump on. Now I read the free digital preview of Avenging Spider-Man number one on Comixology, and I thought Avenging Spider-Man, meh.
Looks
you know, this
sweet.
Seems. Yeah, I was really into it. Every page, I laughed at Spider-Man because he's the Spider-Man that I like. You know, he's telling jokes, and
here
I don't
I
have
thought
to
you
know.
Were just a Joe Mad fan.
Oh, you know what? I actually am looking forward to that because I like the Spider-Man Marvel team up books.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's my thing with Brand New Day, and I was actually at Facebook Adam over the weekend and or sometime this week and said, you know, if I want to read Spider-Man, like I liked Avenging Spider-Man, you know, preview, if I want to read Spider-Man, should I jump into Amazing Spider-Man? Should I just start with the Straczynski stuff way back when? But even with Adam's help, it just seems like so much continuity, and this Avenging Spider-Man seems like a nice book where I can just jump in and have fun with Spider-Man.
And if it does its job, it'll make you interested in going back
to
and
buy
finding
more stuff. Because
stuff.
There's the Punisher series that's just started by Rucka, and I love Rucka.
You
and
can
I love
really
Mark
jump
Wade
into Spider-Man with two trades plus Big Tom.
There's, but I don't want to start with two trades. I mean, I know this whole Brand New Day thing kept referencing, and I like longer-running series, so if I like it, I'm going to buy that eventually anyway, so why not just start at the beginning? But I guess what I'm getting at is I'm going to eat my hat. Even though I said I was never going to buy a Marvel book ever again, I don't know, 10, 12 some odd podcasts ago, I am going to buy Avenging Spider-Man number one because I'm interested in it. Exactly. See, good for me because I'm opening my mind.
Now, see, here's, the thing.
Proud.
Here's what I think is going to hurt DC. The shipping every month regardless of creative teams. I think that's going to end up hurting them in the long run. As much as we hate late books, DC was never late enough for us to care about for...
Right.
The core books. I mean, Batman Odyssey is a completely different thing, and, and Batman Morrison stuff.
Yeah.
But I think changing creative teams is going to take loyal comic fans who care about that. And if you're going Gail Simone, Gail Simone, Gail Simone, somebody I've never heard of, somebody I've never heard of, Gail Simone, somebody I've never heard of, you're going to lose those people that like Gail Simone. You're going to like lose those people who are like,
but what about the 40 new customers Colin has who don't know who Gail Simone is?
Right, that's what I was
saying. I've been reading it for a while. I could give. I really couldn't care who the writer is.
You read a lot of Green Lantern and Batman. They're very consistent teams. I mean, Green Lantern's been Jeff Johns for 4 years.
But if Jeff
years.
Johns left, you'd probably still buy Green Lantern.
I know it because I read the Green Lantern core stuff. You know, it's not Jeff Johns. I don't care about who the writer is. I just care about the story. I don't read. I mean,
I don't read for
Jeff Johns.
Think,
I read for the character.
I don't think
so
they're just
going to
be changing creative teams willy nilly. But they've set a standard saying what?
The one book has five creative teams and five issues.
Who? Which book?
Disagree.
Because only one issue have come out of most of them. So
yeah, but like you look in previews, they have different artists listed.
But switching artists is
switching artists.
When you say creative teams, you mean just switching artists, or do you mean switching artists?
Somebody can't make their time. You know,
either one. More so the writer because it changes the voice of the story midstream.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, definitely. That's good. I mean, but things like that with DC's New 52, it seems like it's a lot of breaks where. The writer who's leaving has finished their story with that issue, and the next issue is going to be a new story.
And
like with Keith Giffen coming on Superman, they said that Perez's story is going to end in issue 7.
That's right now. That's what these people are keeping up, and they've had a 3-month
and
lead.
Comics are supposed to be serialized fiction.
Yeah.
You know, you read it in installments, and you come back, and you get your next thing. And that's, like, the one thing about the New 52 that I've loved. They've gone back to the idea that, hey, this is serialized fiction. You end with a cliffhanger. You do something that we're all like, oh, my gosh, did you guys see that? I cannot wait. And it's not that Marvel doesn't do that, but it's like in the last 10 years, it's become accepted that to have these high production values, you end with a cliffhanger and, oops, it's 4 months before the next issue. You know, back in the day, in the days of Jim Shooter with Marvel, that was not a lot acceptable. It was, we have a monthly deadline, and we will kill ourselves to hit that.
Marvel books are really late.
Well, you haven't had any DC core books late either, and I don't see any core ones that have changed creative teams.
But they weren't either. I mean, none of them were late before the launch. So,
right.
I mean,
well, that's just something that they wanted to put down and say, we need these books to be on time.
If you tell me I can have Jim Lee and Jeff Johns on Justice League, but it might be a week late every now and then, I'm more than okay with that.
Sure.
3 months late, that's a problem.
Right, but you got it. I mean, we had a 6-month gap in Astonishing X-Men. We've had, you know...
Daredevil,
it's a big book. It was one of their biggest books at the time.
Yeah.
You know,
itself
and
didn't hit a monthly schedule.
No.
I think the thing with
everyone but the last one didn't. That was planned for double-sized after schedule. That was scheduled for late.
But I think the thing with your argument with the New 52 is that, you know, you're saying, like, at least from our standpoint as fans, long-term fans who know these creators, who know the writers and the artists, and we prefer certain art styles, I think, you know, we would be upset. You know, like, if they had made Grant Morrison stay on time with Batman Inc. every month when it was coming out, and, you know, Yannick Paquette drew one issue, and then I got, you know, some random person I'd never heard of drawing the next issue, you know, I might have been a little irked by that. But someone else who doesn't really pay that much attention to the artist, like the new crowd that DC is aiming towards, I don't know if they're going to...
But even with that, I was introduced to a new artist on Batman Inc.,
yeah.
Because and Yannick Paquette, but also Chris Burnham.
Oh, right, exactly.
You know, who took
Chris
a fill-in for him, so I don't necessarily see fill-ins being horrible.
But it's like you said, the whole point of the New 52 is not to appease us, it's to bring new blood to the hobby.
Yeah.
And if you have someone off the street and Colin says, oh yeah, you know, Superman comes out monthly, you know, guy's like, great, I'm loving this Superman, he comes back, you know, in November, and it's like, oh, well, yeah, it was supposed to be out this week, but come back in 2 weeks, it'll definitely be out.
Right.
If that, you know, those little by little things, that's what get people to lose their interest and fade away, and
so,
it's still back.
But let me ask this other question. How many of these new readers we found are going to stay?
That's what we're
guess is 20%.
No,
at
I
best.
Think it's going to be harder than that.
I think it'll be closer to 50%. I really do. 50%
of
the new...
I hope it's 80%. I hope it's 100%.
I think it's
going to
be much harder.
But Colin and I have been saying, you know, me helping him with this shop, I've noticed, like, there are these people that have come in, you know, in August and September, like, no clue what they're doing in a comic shop. They start out getting, like, 2-3 books. Now these have become almost weekly customers, and they're just branching and branching
but
and branching.
It's new. It's fun.
Sure.
Right?
But why
shouldn't it be fun
6 months down the line?
But it's fun for us. That's what got us started.
Yeah.
Why can it not work for somebody else?
Let me ask you a question. When you first started collecting, everybody sat around and thought the same thing about you.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I'm in 20%.
Right.
You've been
collecting for how long?
4.5 years.
You know what I mean?
But
you came back into it. Right.
So
everybody has
a lot of these.
Somewhere.
A lot of this is people coming back.
Yeah.
But I'm saying
these are the people in the 90s that.
Yeah, exactly. These are the same people that came from the 90s that picked up every image book 100-fold.
Exactly. And these people. And these people are excited. It's like.
No, but Lee Field started on Hawkeye.
That's what I mean. The 90s fans are going, Lavelle and Liefeld and all those guys.
Nick's pointing to himself.
I was a big 90s fan. I got all that stuff.
Me too.
Yeah,
X-Men.
I've got it.
For all, as much as we make fun of it, those of us that bought X-Men number one the day it came out were like...
Well, why do you think they're going back to Blue Team, Gold Team? That was big in the 90s.
It worked.
It was so huge.
Superman break got me into Superman. And breaking a Batman got me into Batman.
Me too, Nick.
The shake up of Spider-Man, the clone stuff got me into Spider-Man.
Well, they're bringing back the Scarlet Spider just for you.
I'm saying that Kyle Rayner becoming the Green Lantern got me into Green Lantern. All those stunts got me to... And then they were stunts.
There is a reason they do them. And...
Yeah, they were stunts. I mean, like, they were overt, obvious stunts with a finite template, you know, of how long it would last.
But for every one of us who's stuck
But around, I agree that the percentage of 20% is probably not too far off.
But you know what? I just like to see people coming because I don't want it to. I don't want the paper part of it to fade away. I want something to hold in my hand.
But I think if every stunt style thing they do, you know, gets 20% of the people sticking around forever, as long as they keep coming up with new innovative ways to do it, that's not bad.
Yeah, the trick with these stunts,
it's realistic.
The trick with these stunts is to do them well, and I think that's what we've been saying about the new 52. It's not that it's the stunt that worked. It was like, okay, it's a stunt. We all recognize that. But then when we got them in our hands,
they were good.
They were good.
They're not all good. They're not all going to stick around.
Plus, I don't think it harmed any of the books, as people have think. A lot of people thought they were going to when it first was announced.
Really?
I don't think it did.
Birds of Prey is worse than it was before.
I didn't really. But I mean, like, Batman and Green Lantern stayed at least the same, but it was dropped.
Batman and Green Lantern. Green Lantern
didn't change
at all. They're the ones that didn't change at all.
Sure they did. Batman completely changed his creative
Batman
team.
Still
Justice League, team, Action Comics, Animal Man.
No, but
they didn't need to.
Justice League and Superman were so broken, though.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But they fixed them.
But and I'd been talking about that for a long time.
It's better than doing this.
Long before this remake.
Superman's been awful for about the last 7-8 years.
Yeah. So I was very happy when they did this.
Something with this that I think we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with is, like you said, changing the creative teams. Like I was saying, you know, after so many issues where we get a new creative team who tells that story arc. And I think the ideal thing from a corporate standpoint is for comics to be ubiquitous again, like they were in the 30s and 40s, where everyone would just, you know, it wasn't just kids stuff. You pick up a comic and just, you know, with a couple extra minutes, flip through a comic and be entertained. Whereas it became so focused into a collector's market that, you know, like we said, we were the core audience and we're not the core audience anymore. The demographic has widened, and the goal here is to get comics to be that sort of entertainment medium for everybody.
And we resist it because it was our thing for so long, but we don't understand, like, it's what's best for comics. I love it.
That's what I don't like about the relaunch. I love DC, but the only thing I don't like about it is they're changing so much of the storylines, mm-hmm. and that they explain something. I'm like, well, wait, what happened with that before? They did this before, like Just League International, like
right.
At what point? Like that
it's
was
like
the
you kind of wish you could be one of those people that knows nothing. They're probably getting more enjoyment.
I'm getting more confused out of this stuff, trying to figure out. I'm like, well, I thought this happened before. Why is this going on?
Right.
That's the only thing I didn't like.
But a lot of them were also only one or two issues in, and you know, maybe the story's going somewhere.
And Ryan, just to be clear, I don't care about changing between arcs.
Yeah.
It's when you have mid-arc.
Sure. Suddenly next month we said we were going to give you Geoff Johns, but you're
the return of the fill-in issue.
But here's the thing, that they have talked about the return of the fill-in issue.
And
but
the fill-in's fine. It's basically, if you're a 6-part story and part 4 is not written by Geoff Johns like it should be, that's going to piss people off.
Well, I think that's part of what they went into. They said, we need to get this many in the can. We need these books to be complete. And they also said, we don't want every arc doesn't have to be 6 issues.
I picked random number.
But that's Marvel's thing, has been 6 issues. And everything's been, ever since the Bendis model, everything's been 6 issues. So now I think Hawkman's, the first story arc, is only 4. Reading the new solicits, it says the conclusion of this opening storyline.
Animal Man's 5.
They're changing it up so that you can have these creative changes without it affecting the story. So let's say you get the writer say, hey, I want a plot for the however long, you know, it's going to be 5 issues, I want a plot. I want, you know, at least scripts for the first 3. Then you can have a different writer or a different artist take over, so you have the symmetry of the story.
And I think that goes back to what Jeremy was saying, too, is that they're doing it well. Like, they're thinking this out well.
Yeah. Where you don't have a
JLA.
Where you don't have a story like the Straczynski Superman, where, I'm done with it, I don't want to do it anymore. Okay, well, can we have your plot so we can try to cobble something together?
Yeah.
I think they're getting everything up front. And they're saying, okay, artists, we have a schedule. You can't go play video games like, you know, certain artists used to like to do, and I'll get the book out whenever. Yeah. Well, specifically Joe Mad. But look at that Ultimate X. How long did that take?
Loeb is awful.
Well, that was Art Adams.
That was Art Adams.
And so they're saying this, and I think that's DC coming down saying this isn't acceptable. And it's a different company, but it's saying
6 months is like 6 months between issues is unacceptable, regardless.
Even 2 months is unacceptable.
But a week is not.
A week, and they're not going to do anything over a week. Like, we've already had one book. We have two books switch already.
Don't you think it's pretty standard?
Batgirl and Red Lanterns.
They get the new guy. They get the exciting artist to start it off, and then once he gets a few issues in the can, he starts to fall behind. It's standard for them to switch artists.
I mean,
yeah, it's called a big
my
switch.
My thing is, I am all
it's
in
called keeping the momentum.
I am all in favor of artists' rights in terms of like compensation and being taken care of.
Yeah, healthcare.
But there's a part of me that feel, you know, there's a lot of like complaint that some of the reasons for these changes is because of the tight editorial control and stifling their freedom. But I kind of feel like when you sign a contract with Marvel and DC to produce a monthly book, you produce a monthly book. Because back in the day, they always had these kind of editorial last-minute changes, and those guys could do it. Yeah. Like, what's so hard about it that you can't do it?
Look at the difference in art between 70s books and today's books.
Yeah, but how much easier is it to make it a change digitally than it is to go and redraw a page? You know, but I'm saying, there's a lot of things to make it easier now, too.
I know things have changed, but at the same time, it's like, guys back in the day, man, they could put an issue out in 3 days. Yeah. Now, I know that's an extreme case, but when crazy stuff like that happened, they were professional, they adapted. And I'm
saying that, like, Korean animators are faster than everybody else because, you know, like, they don't get to eat.
Well, yeah, no. And that's what I'm saying, Nick. Like,
don't get DC ideas.
I definitely think there should be, like, a compensation thing. I don't think they should be treated like slaves. But but it's kind of like by the same token, I you know, it's not like they don't know what they're getting into when they get into it. That's all. Like,
I just think that people don't vote with their wallets. So bottom line is, that's all that matters. We could say, but we don't like it. We don't like it.
Right.
If you buy it, then you don't care.
I think going back to what I was trying to get at with my Marvel example of me buying Avenging Spider-Man is sort of like, I'm kind of changing my perspective of how I look at comics. Like, when I first started getting back into comics a year or two ago, I was saying, like, okay, here's a really good story that I'm going to collect because I think it's a great story that exemplifies the character, and I don't want to buy anything else because it's not good enough. And now I'm kind of saying, like, I want to branch out into more characters, but I want to have that clean jumping on point. And at the same time, as long as the book is fun and I'm interested and I'm having fun while I'm reading it, then I'll keep buying it. It's not about the...
I think you worry too much, though, about the clean jumping on point.
I think I do.
I think, you know, because there is that perception of it, like, we need a jumping on point.
Right.
You know, back in the day,
perspective hasn't shifted completely.
You know, like, you just used to pick up an issue because they were on the newsstands. And,
Yeah, and I think that's basically how I got back into stuff was I picked up an issue of Ultimate Spider-Man. I mean, it was actually midway into an arc.
I really think what you do, and that's half the fun of the hobby, is you look at something, you pick it up, this is cool, go home and read it. Mm-hmm. And if you do think it's amazing and you want to get in on it, you know, Colin's got shelves of back issues specifically for that reason.
Or if you're really lazy and cheap, you go look at Indians and read the story. Or
well, yeah.
You can, and that's something you couldn't do before. Right, so that is one thing.
But, I was going to say, like, changing my perspective on comics, I feel like that's going to open me up to reading more stuff that I like. Like, reading the new 52 number ones like we did, I thought was really great. And, you know, I was so excited that Colin was like, here, you know, here's a special deal on the 52 number ones. But getting through all of them and getting through week four, I was like, yeah, I have read only DC for about 2 years, and I think it's time to stop that. And there are so many other things that I would probably like, and I like comics as a medium. You know, I like Batman, but I don't just like Batman because that's the best comic, in my opinion. You know, I just happen to like the character. But I'm sure that I would like, you know, Mark Waid's Daredevil, or I'm sure I would like any number of Vertigo titles that I've never read, or anything from Icon, or anything like that. Image, Dark Horse, you know, looking through previews, I look at this and I say, wow, that looks cool, and it looks fun. And
I can say, you know, Nick's got a great point about us voting with our wallets. You know, yes. I sit here, I'm just amazed by what DC has done.
Right.
That doesn't mean that in my monthly pull list, it's probably, what, 50-50 Marvel and DC? I buy all, you know, the Marvel stuff and read it because I do. I still love the Marvel characters. I'm just amazed at what DC's trying to do.
Right.
Because I don't feel that. I see that from Marvel, and I wish... The only thing, I just wish Marvel would do that. That's what I just...
And it's not because necessarily it could be source of its concern.
It could be so amazing.
But yeah, exactly. Think about it in terms of like a car. If you're Toyota, do you remodel the Camry every year when it's the number one selling car? No. Well, you make small improvements, you make incremental improvements, and you change it every 8 to 10 years.
Exactly, and if Toyota loses a quarter, what do? They go in and redesign the Camry.
We didn't lose a quarter. We lost. No, Marvel lost month.
But also, Marvel has relaunched every one of its books in the last 2 years.
Marvel Keeping also continuity. Has the Ultimate line.
No, but continuity has nothing to do with coming out with a new model. They've come out with a new model of every one of their cars in the last 2 years.
But a lot of that's marketing.
You're saying
absolutely, but it's still a new number one where you're complaining that this isn't.
Well,
but
it hasn't gotten.
But I'm just saying they've come out with a new number one.
Selectively picked continuity and won't tell you what mattered and what didn't.
We'll find out.
And
what
they can make up whatever bullcrappy they want, and we're just supposed to believe it.
But I think that comes from the perspective thing that I was talking about. We went into this saying,
"Yes, I know it's a comment."
Well, no, I'm laughing because they just announced Sabretooth's coming back, and I'm like. Well, there was one that they killed, and he could never come back because they've cut off his head and burned it and sent it to the moon.
Whoever that guy was, so there's hints in the issue that he got his head cut off that he could come back. What he said in the interview?
Go back.
But I'm just saying, so as far as continuity, they can change and do whatever they want, and Marvel has certainly done their fair share of that.
But go back to
how they explain Shadowland.
That's half the fun, is figuring this stuff out.
What happened to the demon? Is he still running in New York?
Power fist punch him in the face.
Oh, of course, that would kill every demon.
Go back to May when the new 52...
Well, you don't know that.
Was it May when the new 52 was announced? Like, the day of, the internet cracked in half with rage, and all these people said, you know, I've been reading DC for, you know, 20 years.
How can they renumber Action Comics?
You know, all these people said, you know...
I was one of those
people. Wasn't even a cop during the podcast. He was so mad at DC.
But exactly.
I wasn't mad about them renumbering. I was mad about
the digital.
The same day digital.
You were pretty pissed off.
But people who
I wasn't mad
got
about the
so mad.
The relaunch.
Yeah, it was the,
no, we were the ones
it was
mad
a digital.
About
the,
people who got so mad that said, you know, 20 years of what I liked has been invalidated.
My Action Comics run is meaningless
right,
now.
But it's not meaningless. It still exists. It's in your short box at home. You can still go
but
through
now you're
and
Uncanny
read it.
X-Men
you know, Colin
run
can still sell
relevant.
Those issues. The issue is the perspective of people buying the comics. Like I said, when I was reviewing the number ones, it was hard, but I tried to look at each number one and not think about anything that I'd read before in the comics. Even, you know, Scott Snyder's Batman run, which is going to rely on stuff he set up in Detective. And, yeah, I stumbled over that one. And Geoff Johns, you know, relying really heavily on all his Green Lantern stuff. I tried to look at every book and not rely on that history. I tried not to worry about what the purple hooded girl means. Try not to worry about how Superman got from where he is in Action Comics.
How very Morrison.
Superman. How very...
In fact, actually, after you said that in a last podcast, that I said, you know what, I'm going to do that with Superman next time, because I went into it thinking I should have known something, and I need to go into it as it's a brand new thing.
One of the greatest things I've done, and you can rag on the Morrison kick, but reading that book, and he makes that point, when it puts that idea in your head and you read this, is like, why do I get so hung up on what's happened? Why can't I just read it and enjoy it? And
I just like to make you guys argue.
No, I'm fine with that because this has been an awesome
conversation.
I'm fired. No, I think all this conversation is moot because Marvel's season one graphic novels are just going to be the new thing.
Yes.
Well, see, I'm wondering what those are going to be like.
They're going to be just like Superman Earth 1.
They're not going to be, you know, they're going to take the world by storm like Earth 1 graphic novels did.
And where's the second Earth 1 graphic novel since it's been a year?
It's on the shelf right now.
Yeah. But the one point I just want to make is I've sold, I think, 1,100% more Action Comics number one than I did of the last issue of Action Comics.
Wow.
But Action Comics number two, I've only sold 1,000% more.
Aww.
So I'm just saying, I'm loving this because of the sales thing, but also what I like, and in a sense, I like this from Marvel with the new number ones that they have coming, is I'm looking forward to a new Hulk number one. For when the guy that's coming in to get his Justice League number three, and he's going to come in and say, oh, there's a new Hulk number one, because I've seen a lot of cross... But you can't have, in the middle of Fear Itself, you look at that wall at the Fear Itself section, you're walking away. There's, what, 18 different Fear Itself titles?
And I wouldn't walk away from a Flashpoint wall like that?
Well, you would, but I'm not talking Flashpoint, but I'm saying my new number one DC wall, where you can pick and choose and none of them tie together.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty cool.
Apples and oranges. You're comparing to an event book to a relaunch of a launch.
Right. No, but I'm just saying. So getting new people, I'm getting new people in.
An event book.
No, but what? The difference? No,
what's
Colin's
between a crossover and an event? What's the difference?
No, what Colin's saying is he has people coming in, getting DC, and they're looking at the Marvel stuff, and the Marvel stuff they're buying is like low number jumping on point stuff, and they can't do that with Fear Itself because Fear Itself is overwhelming. If they were looking at the Flashpoint wall, they would think the exact same thing. But the point is, the Flashpoint wall is not there anymore. It's been replaced with the DC 52. Fear Itself is still there, and, you know, people are just kind of looking at it like, what is this? I don't get it. You know, is there a new number one? That's all he's saying.
No, I get it. It's just,
because there are people that are branching out. It's not like
ended 2 months ago. Fear Itself ended today, so you can't really.
But how many? Fear Itself?
Well, it's 16.
Well, I was gonna say, but how many Fear Itself?
All I can say is passively.
The titles are out there.
All I can say is passively sitting here watching today. There were a lot of people that came in and said, "Finally."
Any of the stuff that you guys are saying, I'm just saying it's not gonna last.
But then Marvel's being stupid, bringing out 7.1.
Did I say it's going to last?
No, you were impressed by the first month.
If it never happens again, I won't be surprised. I'm just amazed it happened, period.
Once. Yeah.
Once to me,
16.
When you're...
There's not 16 dedicated movies.
When it's been that way for so long, just to see it even one time just blows my mind.
I think it's going to be more than one time. I really do.
And it's a good start for them to have like this, said, to see that it is working right now.
Even if 2011 is just 1 month, if 2012 is 2 months,
I just
want to see Marvel sweat a little bit and maybe up their game.
Because that'll get their creative juices flowing. Exactly.
I agree with you. I think for 1 month it is impressive because this is what they said they set out to do. They said we're going to launch the marketing campaign. We're going to take everything back to number one. Easy jumping on point. People who don't know anything about the characters can get in. Fans who know stuff about the characters can still enjoy it. And that's what happened. They put their money where their mouth was and they got what they want out of it. Yeah.
I never thought it would be this good.
I thought it was going to be big, but I didn't think
I
didn't think it was going to be this big.
No, I didn't. I thought it was going to be a massive failure and, oh my God, is this going to be the end of DC Comics?
But I think it's all on how
and
well
6
they
months down the road, they go
back
to
especially with
the
advertising,
numbering them
back
to 900
got out
or whatever.
To
I don't think they will. I think they're going to
stick with the ones. I think they will.
At least a decade till you get close to Action Comics 1000.
I think that'll be the one that they come back and say, this is issue 1000.
I don't even think they'll... I think they'll do what... They'll pull a Marvel and they'll do...
Yeah, like they did with Deadpool.
A one-shot that is Action Comics 1000.
Yeah.
It would have been the 1000th issue, but keep the core... number.
But I also
think it would be an extra?
Yeah, I think that's what they would do.
As much as I hated it when they announced
it, that's fine.
I actually think it's a really cool thing because, you know, while the nostalgist in me loves that history, it is kind of cool that DC is willing to say making good comics and selling good comics is more important than a number.
I also like how they did it, though. With Action Comics number one, they went back and they're telling his origin story.
Yeah.
Which I think is a neat way to go back
absolutely
to number one and makes it more palatable than, say, like Superman number one. Now, granted, they've done that a couple times. Not necessarily embracing the history and everything. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a neat way to do it.
But yeah, it could... I'm not saying by January this whole thing could tank.
Explode, but...
But... It's really cool right now, and I'm just amazed at how well they pulled it off.
Yep. There are a lot of books out there that I don't think were good enough to hold interest if you weren't a comics reader. If you picked up Blackhawks number one, would you pick up another comic book? I'd say half of them are in that category. I'd say at least half.
Not half.
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't go
excited
as far
about
as
it
half.
Until we tried to talk.
Are you saying
the,
like
the G.I. Joe
readers?
But yes, I'm
that
saying,
are picking up. I don't think they pick up unknown like more. They pick more common characters like Superman, Green Lantern.
Yeah.
If I walked in and bought Superman number one and I'd never touched the comic, I would not buy Superman number two.
I don't know.
I
wouldn't have had enough to...
I wouldn't have.
As I've never read Superman.
I don't
Superman comic. Actually, I kind of...
I'm just thinking, actually, I like the Action Comics the best, though.
So there's too much? You prefer the Bendis, I'll spread one issue out over six?
No, I prefer the middle ground.
Well, I think that's a really subjective question, though. I mean, that's your opinion of Superman number one. I mean, even I had that opinion.
I agree. No, but that's what I'm picking.
No, I know. But, I mean, like, you don't know what the new reader is going to like. I mean, I know a lot of people who I was friends with in college who would see me reading comics and be like, oh, I've always thought about picking up comics, but I don't like Batman. I hate superheroes. I think superheroes are dumb. And me being a whole DC guy back then, I didn't really know what to say. I was like, oh, there's like Vertigo stuff, and that's like Sandman, you know, then they don't want the
If you would have told me I'd be looking forward to Animal Man and Vampire,
exactly.
I would have told you were crazy.
Maybe there are people that think Blackhawks is going to be the coolest thing in the world, or maybe there are people who are really into
Justin
Voodoo,
did.
Or, yeah, exactly, Justin. Like,
and the people
liked it, but,
and the people that picked up Aquaman. And, you know, I loved it.
Death of a Prince is still available.
What? No, sold out.
But iVampire is the only non-superhero book.
Voodoo's not a superhero.
I want to know.
Well, none of them.
She's a shape-shifting alien.
That's not a superhero. She doesn't put on a cape. She's a warrior.
You have to have a
you have to remember, this is the DCU, though. So the idea is these are to be superhero books. These are set in the DCU.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have Vertigo, and they will branch out. I'm sure there will be a lot more to come.
It's much more reminiscent of, like, 60s and 70s DC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, it was all DCU, but it was different genres within the universe.
Uh-oh.
Dead air.
Yeah. No. I was looking at the statues behind Nick. Sorry.
Dead air.
Well, good. Dead air. Well, it's time to wrap it up. I need to get home to relieve Nana.
Show anymore.
Yep.
Very nice.
Ooh, wow.
So, we'll pick up next week. We'll definitely talk about some books that we like. What have we liked so far? The number twos. What have we liked some more of the Marvel stuff? Some
Hulk
of the
number
non-
one next week.
Is it
X-Men?
Is that supposed
I don't think
to be
it's next week.
Sorry.
What is it, the Wolverine?
Wolverine and the X-Men is next week.
Well, that's right. Hulk is the last week of October.
I don't remember.
That's Aaron and Silvestri, right? Okay.
Next weekend.
I don't know.
I don't
looked
remember.
At next week's anyway, shipping.
Somebody better figure out what Hulk is.
What is that?
Of
Omega Protocol thing.
Yeah, next week is the last.
Yeah, it should be Hulk. That's what I thought.
Is
this a 4-week month, right? Yeah, not a 5-week thing.
While everybody's talking, I'm going to record my own show here.
Hey, this is Adam.
This is Adam.
Yeah, it's next week. Oh, my gosh, with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different covers.
Six covers.
Adam loves one. Not Adam Hughes.
I love him, but stay away from Neil Adams' cover.
Yeah, we got the Hulk, we got the Adams, we got the Blank, we got the Keown, we got the Ladron, and the Portasio covers.
Wish they'd stop doing Blank covers.
Neil Adams.
Actually, don't like tell Nick covers, no Blank man. Covers. Nick loves the Blank covers.
I like the Blank
covers. Love the Blank covers.
I kind of never... I don't know why that concept just never entered into my life until when I was flipping through previews and it was like, Blank cover, take it to the con and get a sketch. And I thought, that's awesome. Like,
my favorite was the first one, though. They printed on glossy stock. That
oh, yeah.
You couldn't draw on. It's like, nice try, guys.
It's my mint smudged sketch cover.
But yeah, I mean, Marvel's got good stuff next week with X-Men.
Ooh, Game
and Hulk,
of Thrones
and
2.
It's Game of Thrones. It's my favorite DC week because it's Flash, Aquaman,
right.
And you like all those C-list characters.
So,
Black, Firestorm, Hawkman.
You know, it's that, but that's the fun. There's no way in the world I would have ordered 80 copies of Swamp Thing and sold 80 copies of Swamp Thing had they not done something.
Here's the other question I have on the positive side. When I walked in here 4.5 years ago, I swore up and down, I will never follow an artist, I will never follow a writer, I will never know their names, I'm going to read characters and stories I like.
And look at you now.
And look at me now.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. I have artists I like, I have writers that I'll write.
Diodato, he's infatuated with Diodato.
Like, Brubaker could write his life history on a roll of toilet paper and I'd buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like his
writing. Absolute edition.
If you're listening, Ed, you should really do that. That'd be really cool.
Other than Ed Brubaker blocking me on Twitter for no reason, I love the man.
Maybe he found out who you were.
That's a great stopping point.
That is. Okay, so we will talk at you next week, and we're out.
I stood and looked down. You know I lost a lot of friends there, baby. I got no time to mess around. So if you want it, got to bleed for it, baby. Yeah.